afternoon.
I'm Rick Culkins. I represented Thomas Liskey, the personal representative in this matter. And Mr. Brostrom's covered a lot of this, but as you know, trying to get something said in 3 minutes for lawyers is almost impossible, so.
And I might add.
Are we?
Is that all 10 minutes?
Yes.
Are we done?
We are finished.
Okay.
Thank you. How much time is remaining for the appellant?
30 seconds, Judge.
You may proceed with your 30 seconds.
Thank you. Three things. This is what happened in this case. Trial court was presented with the fact that the estate was insolvent. It needs money to close the estate. The trial court, here's a source of funds, I'll do it. Just because you want to do it doesn't mean you can do it because there's no law supporting for what he did. Two, the stipulation, you're exactly right. The stipulation specifically stated once we get done with this litigation, if anybody wants to ask for a PR special administrator, feel free. They never did. The last thing, this standing, it's jurisdictional. It cannot be inferred from a statute. I don't care what the intervention statute does or does not say. It does not trump the probate code. The case law is clear. Standing is a jurisdictional issue that can be raised at any point in time. It cannot be conferred. It cannot be waived. They don't have it. They've never had it. And this order should be reversed and vacated. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The case is submitted and counsel is excused. Thank you. We appreciate you coming. Wayne, provide this educational opportunity for the students. Our next case is Loop versus Mueller. Loop versus Mueller. The appellant, you may proceed when you're ready.
I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please. Good afternoon. My name is Clark Grant, attorney from Columbus, Nebraska, and I represent the appellant, Cheryl Mueller. Cheryl Mueller was the defendant in the case below. It started with a case that was filed in 2015 by Margo Loop, who was acting as the conservator and guardian for her mother, Lorraine Mueller, at that point in time. The case involved considerable other litigation as well. The conservatorship itself was even hotly contested, and that began in 2014. The parties eventually entered into a settlement agreement that attempted to resolve all the pending issues and various lawsuits. And included in that settlement agreement was a resolution of the 2015 lawsuit that we're here on today. The result was that Cheryl Mueller agreed to confess a judgment, but the personal, or excuse me, Margo Loop, the guardian and conservator, agreed that she would never seek to collect on that judgment. The confession of judgment occurred, and the dates are important because it's an issue about when whether or not my client was time barred for pursuing a petition in the same case to set aside the confession of judgment based upon it being fraudulently procured. So anyway, the judgment was entered then on January 8th, 2016. And of course, Nebraska law provides that you have 2 years to bring an action to set aside a judgment that was procured by fraud. There's also, you can also bring an action to set aside a judgment under the district court's general equity powers. And that's addressed in the brief, but for now I just need to stick to the dates and what occurred. Lorraine Mueller then died a little over a year after the judgment was entered. She died on February 6, 2017, and an action was brought by Ryan Tessendorf, who was named as personal representative in Lorraine's 2007 will. He brought that action in Platte County, Nebraska, he brought it 5 days after her death, which statutorily was the first day he could bring the action. It might have been the sixth day. Unbeknownst to Mr. Tessendorf, Margot Loop filed an action for probate in the state of Kansas on the very same day that her mother passed away. And so...
Both cases were filed in the state of Kansas, right?
Well, no. So the initially, there was a probate action brought here in
that
Nebraska.
That was in Platte County. Okay.
And we jostled over the jurisdictional issue. Ultimately, the Kansas court ruled that it had the jurisdiction to go forward with the probate. And so Mr. Tessendorf then filed the 2007 will in the Kansas court and sought to probate it in Kansas. So in the state of Kansas, in the probate court in Frederick County, there was then a will contest. Margot Loop asserted that the most recent and valid will for Lorraine Mueller was one that she did in December of 1979. Of course, we felt the 2007 will maybe was a little fresher. During the pendency then of the will contest, Margot Loop filed a motion in that court on November 20th, 2017, and that's a critical date too because that's the date that Judge Steinke in the Platte County District Court determined that was when Cheryl Mueller, my client, should have discovered the fraud that she was alleging. Anyway,
what was his finding, that she should have discovered it or that she did discover it?
Well, apparently that she did discover it because there's no other explanation. It should have or did.
Mr. Grant, so you don't run out of time, what exactly was the fraud?
Okay, so the fraud that we're alleging today goes to the underlying settlement agreement itself, and that representations were made to get my client to sign that agreement that simply weren't true. Primarily, the representation was that the estate would be barred from ever attempting to collect on the judgment. What's happened is Margot Luke has made an argument that, well, we're not attempting to collect against the assets of Cheryl Mueller. All we want is a set off against what she's going to inherit from Lorraine Mueller's estate. And there's a distinction, and I agree there's a distinction, but I think that distinction is doesn't pan out for Margot Loop when you consider the fact that she entered into an agreement that said the estate of Lorraine Mueller cannot collect.
But once Margot files her motion to have that judgment transferred to the Kansas court, isn't Cheryl on notice of what's going on?
She's definitely on notice, and that brings me also to my second argument. Just to finish the first argument, yes, she was on notice, but she argued simply in the Kansas court, and by the way, she attempted to address it in the Kansas court by a pro se filing, and that issue never actually got in front of the trial judge in Kansas until well over 6 months after the motion was filed. And then the judge said, well, I can't rule on this because there's an appeal pending on the will contest. So it was really never actually addressed in the Kansas court. She didn't rest on her laurels. She tried to get an answer to this question about how can this judgment be used to collect against me from the estate. So she did everything she could, but jurisdictionally, it didn't happen because the will contest was pending. And by the time it came in front of the trial court, an appeal had already been made with regard to the will contest. The matter was on appeal in the Kansas Court of Appeals at that point in time.
So Mr. Grant, we've got cases going on side by side at this point in time between Kansas and Nebraska.
Correct.
And do you agree that it's the Kansas court's job to determine whether the set-off can happen and whether that violates the agreement with regard to collection?
Perhaps, but the settlement agreement itself said if there's a dispute about the meaning of the settlement agreement, it had to be determined in the Nebraska court, specifically in the District Court of Platte County. That was
All
part
right.
of the settlement agreement.
All right.
So I,
But your client responded to Margot's motion and even had an affidavit that talked about all the points that you're...
Correct.
That you're raising now.
But
and that happened before the 2 years
that, well,
expired,
but if you look at that, what she filed, and Judge Stank, he said, well, look, she must have known because she filed this document talking about fraud. The fraud she was talking about was simply the use of the judgment that it shouldn't be used as to create a lien against her property because the settlement agreement said it couldn't be used as such. And so it wasn't about the procurement of the settlement agreement itself. It was about the use of the judgment that ensued that she was arguing was fraudulent. So it was the pleading where they asserted it. And I know that's a fine distinction, but nevertheless. And okay, and so the other problem with the discovery date is that when it happened, whenever it happened, there wasn't anybody in office to sue. As soon as we had an appointment of a personal representative after the will contest, within just a little over a month of a personal representative being appointed, that's when we brought the action against the estate to have the judgment set aside. The special administrator that was appointed in Kansas had very limited powers, and those powers did not include the authority to sue and be sued. And so we think there should have been a tolling of any statute of limitations during a period of time when we didn't have anybody in office that we could file suit against. Thank you.
Thank you.
May please report, Mr. Grant. My name is Neil Valores. I am the attorney from Columbus that is representing Margo Lope, who is the appellant and the intervener in the underlying case out of Platte County, Nebraska, District Court Platte County of Nebraska. I want to get straight to kind of the point here. We feel that Judge Steinke's ruling was proper, that Mr. Grant is time barred from pursuing his claim to vacate the confession of judgment for almost $340,000. Our position is strictly that there's a statute of limitations that allows the court to a district court to set aside and vacate a order after term. Within 2 years of of the judgment, the only exception to that, as set out by In Re West, which is briefed in our brief, is for a alleged fraud. In this situation, Mr. Grant is talking about dates, and they're very important. My client in the probate case down in Kansas filed a motion on November 20th, 2017, asking that the judgment be set aside against Cheryl Mueller's distributive share of whatever she's going to receive down there. That filing is within the 2 years of the judgment in Platte County being entered. Cheryl Mueller had ample opportunity to file in Platte County within, or Platte County District Court within the 2 years to set aside the judgment that she's requesting. She elected not to do that. She did file a motion and an affidavit in the Sedgwick County Probate Court, and the motion specifically called or specifically said that that the document attached hereto was fraudulent. What document was attached is this settlement agreement. On top of that,
who would she have served at that time with a motion to vacate?
So I think you're going to the tolling argument that Mr. Grant was just making. There is specific powers to the special administrator. There was one appointed, and that special administrator had the power to preserve the assets of the estate. A judgment in favor of the decedent would certainly be an asset of the estate. So we believe that the actual letters for the special administrator gave him the authority to preserve it so he could accept his service. The other option, within the time that Mr. Clark could have done, is he could have filed a motion, could have requested a stipulation that the special administrator be granted that power in Kansas, if he truly didn't believe that, or requested a new special administrator to be appointed for that very reason. They elected not to do that. So I think it's very clear from our perspective that this is, you know, we look at the time frames here. So within the 2 years, there's somebody to serve, and they elected not to do that, that had the authority to preserve the assets. And she's time barred from proceeding. There is no equitable exception to the statute of limitations when that fraud was discovered. Her very action on December 5th, with her motion and her affidavit, clearly put this issue in place. You read in the brief, in the argument that was just made, that there's some kind of distinction between saying that the use of the fraud was not in a document, that the claim was not in a document at the time that was filed, but in fact that it was being used to try to create a lien. Again, her motion, the very language in that, her affidavit, talks about the document being fraudulent itself, the confession of judgment being fraudulent itself. Those go hand in hand. So if one's fraudulent, the other's got to be fraudulent as well. So she's putting that issue on in Kansas. She's taking an active, affirmative step to oppose that and to challenge that there in the Kansas probate court. And she just elects not to do so in Platte County. And so this case is pretty, to our position, is pretty straightforward. It's clear she's outside of time. Her filing of her initial complaint, because she filed two additional complaints after that, amended complaints, before her filing of her initial complaint was 3 years and 10 months after the judgment was entered, well past the 2 years. And the fraud that she's alleging is contained in her motion that she files in Kansas in December within the two-year time frame. She also tries to create a new fraud that is somehow discovered or alleged concerning tax issues. And this, I would say, Your Honor, goes to a lot of the other issues. We have a fully integrated agreement here that states specifically that all representations of the parties are what's contained in that document. There is not one instance that of a tax benefit or anything about taxes being filed on behalf of the decedent's estate at the time contained in that document. So it's, you can't commit a fraud on something if it's never said that you that wasn't in existence. If that makes sense. On top of that, that whole issue, Lorraine Mueller died in February 2017. Margo Loop's power as her conservative would have ended on that date, so it would have been impossible for her to file taxes for 2016, 17, 18, and past, whatever the dates would have been. So this alleged new fraud that occurred that was not discovered until the filing of his second amended complaint, it just doesn't exist. It doesn't hold water.
Did Ms. Mueller also raise that issue in that original affidavit that she filed?
It's actually specifically stated in there. So in the affidavit, it says, "I would not have signed this agreement but for Ms. Loop's assurances that she would not collect and that this agreement was for tax benefits for her estate." I mean, it's specifically stated in both of those. Again, filed within the time frame, well over a month. They could have filed something in Platte County to support to preserve their rights and figured out if there really was a issue with who to serve in Kansas. But again, we feel that is specifically called out in the letters itself. When you have the right to preserve the assets of a state, that was certainly encompassed accepting service of a lawsuit of somebody that's trying to deprive the estate of an asset. So with that, Your Honor, I would request that I reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal because I feel like our position is pretty straightforward here.
And as the appellee, we don't have rebuttal.
Oh, I apologize.
But you're free to waive your remaining time.
Yeah, I'll waive my remaining time. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time does Mr. Grant have remaining?
47 seconds.
Thank you.
Thank you. Real quick, I would like you then to look at the actual motion that my client filed pro se in Kansas. The fraudulent document she's talking about is the filing of Margot Loop in the Kansas court. And the very first paragraph of her motion for review makes that very clear. It has nothing to do with claiming that there was absolutely no claim in that document indicating that the settlement agreement itself was fraudulent or was fraudulently procured. You have to read the entire document, and I believe that's been the source of confusion. But if you go back and look at the very first paragraph in paragraph 3, Roman numeral 3, you'll see that. We certainly take the position that the special administrator did not have the authority to sue or be sued. He had the authority to preserve assets, but that doesn't include the authority to determine who gets the assets. And so I don't think there was nobody in place that had the broad powers of a personal representative until after the will contest. And as I indicated previously, we filed the action against the PR within weeks after he was appointed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The case is submitted and counsel is excused.